the dick to boob ratio is infinite right now. Welcome to Things, the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lavery, and I'm here with Keaton, and I'm here with Zeke. What is going on, guys?
Nothing at all. Just excited to discuss, which, in my personal opinion, is my favorite episode of Westworld so far.
Definitely of this season. This episode was wild.
Yeah, you're getting pretty excited to talk about it. You couldn't wait.
I couldn't wait. I loved every sec. As a big fan of Lost, this like reminded me of what Lost. Like Lost 2.0. So I
we'll
was
get
really
into that.
Pumped.
How many times have you guys seen this episode each?
4.5.
I'm still on one.
Amateur.
I know.
So what we're going to do here, obviously we're talking about Westworld episode 4 on this episode. We're going to break down each scene and then we're going to talk about overarching theories. So the episode opens on a record player. We see a lot of loop mentality. The record is doing a loop. We see someone riding on a bike, which to me, the first thing I noticed that he was wearing like pants and dress shoes. It was very reminiscent of Lost in the Hatch, as Zeke talked about. That's one of my favorite shows, and Desmond was my favorite character, so brought a lot of that back. We see things in the apartment. We see one thing that stood out to me was a fishbowl comes back, and we see James Delos going through a morning routine, you know, brushing his teeth, everything like that. He has trouble pouring his coffee. He's reading a Vonnegut book, and then young William comes in, brings him some whiskey. And to me, you could almost tell right away that Delos was a robot, and it's like walking us through the process of how they do this. What are things you guys picked up from this initial, the first time that we see this loop?
Well, for me, it was like, wow, episode 4, scene 1, and they are confirming that they are either working or they have figured out how to transfer a human's conscience into a host body. And this is a theory that, you know, has kind of started from day one of the show. I know the movies kind of hint at it too. So I was like, wow, they are actually going to just let it all out. Scene 1, episode 4, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah, this is kind of what we ended the last podcast talking about. If this is what they were working towards, and then if we ourselves would think about like putting ourselves into like a host and trying to like live forever throughout that process. And it was interesting that they jumped right into it. And I still think we're trying to figure out, right, what the season long tease is. Like mm-hmm. In season 1, it was, I mean, people figured it out relatively early, but it was like the multiple timeline thing. And that was the big reveal in the last episode, and that William and the man in black were the same person. And this season, I don't think we've figured out what the long question is that needs to be answered, because we were originally exposed to potentially William's daughter, and that was answered. And then whether or not they're trying to put human consciousness into hosts, and now that's answered. So yep. I still don't think we know what the question is that we're supposed to be asking for this season. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's something that's so obvious that we've already missed it.
Yeah. So we'll come back to, because there's more scenes like this. So the next thing we see is Ed Harris and Lawrence riding to camp, and there's a railroad track being laid. The hosts are using humans as railroad tracks, or possibly robots. To me, I thought it was humans. I heard both. Some people projected it was humans. Some people projected it was robots. Either way, they don't really care that the man in black is there. They notice him, and they let him be. And he notices that the track is going a different direction than it did before, so they follow the new tracks. Do you guys have any thoughts on if those were hosts or humans getting used as the railroad tracks?
I think it was humans. I don't know why. I have no evidence to support it, but just kind of based on what we have seen so far this season, I mean, that was pretty, that was a gruesome scene, but I don't know. I'm going to go with my gut and say that was humans.
Yeah, they didn't really put much to it, so either it's something that doesn't matter either way, or it's something that they're going to come back to more. So, I mean, it's either humans or I guess they're off their loop. So the next scene, Clem drags Bernard to a cave and leaves him there. Here he finds Elsie chained up, who obviously isn't too pleased to see him. The last time she saw him, he choked her out. He unchains her, and then she quickly grabs the gun. He tries to explain what happened. He's glitching right in front of her and has a breakdown. He's aware enough to tell her to grab the tablet, and he's going to cognitive lock, and she opens the tablet and quickly realizes the truth that he's a robot. She puts him in safe mode. What are the things you guys noticed about this scene? I did think it was kind of funny, just the thought of going into safe mode, of like someone opening up their PC, and it's just like being like very generic green text and black, like nothing's really working right.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably get more into this at the end with the theory section, but to like the first thing I noticed was kind of Elsie's look. It just, I don't know, to me it just kind of seemed staged. I mean, she was just like kind of laying there, didn't seem too disheveled for somebody that's been like chained up for, I'm assuming, maybe 4 or 5 days. So that was the first thing I personally noticed, but then it kind of went into like how the story wants you to follow is he put her there. Elsie obviously tells us that Bernard was the one that kind of knocked her out back in season one, and then it kind of went from there. But as far as my theory brain going, I kind of noticed Elsie's look, and it just didn't seem to match up to me.
Yeah, I mean, if we're assuming that she's been there for a few weeks, she didn't look like someone that had been stuck in a cave for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Even though apparently Bernard had been bringing her protein bars, or at least left her with a big pile of them. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was enough to kind of keep her fine. But yeah, she looked like it was, I think I might agree with Zeke that it seemed staged, that she seemed too well put together, and the fact that there was nobody there, and for whatever reason Clem dragged her immediately to that spot,
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing else around, seems weird.
So the rest of the scenes, Bernard has a time flash, and then he sees drones working on the brains. He wakes up tied up, and Elsie's pointing a gun at him. She altered his response to physical damage so he can function without the pain. She tries to leave, and he tells her that no help is coming. He remembers there's a lab hidden in the cave. It's lab 22, elevator 12. They find the lab. It had one of those DNA door scanners that we saw before. And everyone inside is dead, both humans and drones, except for one. And then Elsie finds the control printer. I guess the two things that I want to know is, why did they choose to dump Elsie here? And why did Clem specifically drag Bernard to this spot? And Clem, before, she's under orders from Dolores, but it seems like they're causing Bernard to play in Ford's game. So who's actually controlling Dolores? Is Bernard controlling Dolores, or is Dolores controlling herself? And you guys say she was in there for 14 days or so in the cave, but I think it was less time, because people must have had to come and go out of that cave sooner than like 2 weeks or whatever. And I just feel like she would know that cave was there if people were coming in and going.
Well, right, that's the point. So, the timeline of, like, the rebellion, or whenever she was choked out, is actually, it's longer than 2 weeks, but as far as we know, it's a minimum of 2 weeks, but that's why we think that it's staged and seems fishy.
Well, this is, I think it's before Bernard wakes up on the beach. I think this is the first couple days where he's off with Charlotte, and then he gets taken and knocked out and stuff. But at some point he's gonna get from where he is now to on the beach, which is the 2 weeks later. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. But how many days or weeks before that did he choke her out? Because there was significant right. time that passed mm-hmm. between that, because they put her on like some kind of leave, and that was even before everything happened with like Teresa and Ford finished his junk. So I actually feel like it might be like a month or two that she's supposed to have been missing
off of, and she was surviving off of ketchup packets and like protein bars or something like that. Yeah. And then they said they left her a bucket. Was that for her to, did they have water, or was that for her to go to the bathroom in? That's the important question. What was the bucket for?
I think it was bathroom purposes, if it were my first thought.
Yeah.
Why do you think that they, I guess we can get into this now, but why do you think that they chose one to put her there, and why did they drag Bernard to that spot?
We could get into a big theory right now if you want.
Put this in my notes to bring up.
Yeah, because I have an overarching theory as to kind of what I think is going on, and it has to do with kind of this whole Bernard scene with Elsie and then past episode. So,
all right, so then in the next scene, Grace is being walked by, I guess, I don't know if it's Ghost Nation or if it's another faction. I'm just going to call them Ghost Nation for now. Grace is being walked by them, and she's got the stick that they're all tied to, and they throw her next to Stubbs. And one of the Ghost Nation or Lakota starts talking to Stubbs. She translates for him. She says she likes their narratives because she doesn't like people very much. He says evacuation is coming, and she tells him that she's not looking to get out of here. So this is obviously going to lead to speculation as to where she's going. Do you guys have anything like non-theory related that you just noticed from the scene?
I noticed, it kind of seemed to me like they knew each other.
Like that's Stubbs and her?
Yeah, like it wasn't like, you know, kind of any introductions or anything. It was just kind of like, I recognize you. And, you know, here's the plan to kind of Stubbs, you know, saying to Grace on IMDb, but I think we find out later her real name, but that it was, you know, this is the plan how to get out of here. So to me, it kind of seemed like he recognized her. And that's kind of what I picked up on when I first watched it.
All right. Keith, did you get the impression that they knew each other?
Yeah, I did too.
Okay. I didn't get that impression, but I also didn't not get that impression. So, all right. So the next scene, Lawrence and the Men in Black go to Lawrence's home. We saw this last season. This time there's no one around. They sit at the same table they sat at last season, and the same bartender comes out. Lawrence says that he is a son of a bitch and that leaving his family was the best thing he ever did for them. And then the Man in Black notices the bartender is nervous, and then Craddock ambushes them. And Craddock says he's double-crossed by Wyatt. They bring him to a church where the town is being held captive. Craddock asks for the village elder to make a deal. One steps up, and he shoots him instantly. And then Lawrence tells the Man in Black where the weapons are, and Man in Black instantly tells Craddock where they are. Lawrence brings up the Man in Black's daughter, and it seemed to me that the Man in Black realized that he never brought that up with Lawrence in the past, so somehow Lawrence knew that, probably through Ford, because his response is when he's like, oh, he told me about your daughter. He said, did I? And Man in Black tells Craddock he knows where they're going, and he knows the way, so he will fill them in trade. So what did you guys pick up from this scene?
This might be from after like watching it a couple times, but I kind of think this is where the Man in Black / William is kind of figuring out the game. It's almost like he's going to do the opposite of what he should do. So maybe like in the past, like he would just kind of, or maybe he would just like keep his mouth shut and just kind of like, you know, play along and then figure out how to break out later. Whereas now he's going to just give up the guns and then see how it goes. And then later we see like he does like the hero role. So I kind of think this is him kind of just saying, you know what, looking at it as a game, and I'm going to do what Ford doesn't think I'm going to do. That's kind of what I got from it.
This actually had my favorite scene and kind of back and forth in it, where the Man in Black tells Lawrence they're headed to Las Mudas, and Lawrence says, you know, starts to go into his loop response of, there's a lot of mystery down there. And he immediately, Men in Black just immediately cuts him off. He just goes, cut the shit, Lawrence. I know it's where your family is.
Exactly.
I mean, so have you guys noticed that the Man in Black seems to be playing the game different than he did before?
Yes. I think that he knows it's a different game now because the stakes are real. So he's going to look at it in a different way and play it to, obviously he knows he thinks that Ford has a certain like map out for him, so he's going to play it differently to beat it.
So from what we've seen in the past, do we think that this is closer to who he really is, or is he just trying to play the game the way he thinks it's supposed to be played?
See, I think this actually might be where we're headed. So one of the recurring themes is that, you know, Westworld is a place where you can find out who you truly are. And that was something that Logan kept telling William in season one. And he kept telling him to basically just stop being such a wuss and start just having sex with all the robots and killing them all. And William was like, that's just not me, man. And that even came up in the, you know, the, like, I guess, air quotes, current timeline in season one, where the Man in Black is saying the same thing. And then even again this season when William is having conversations with James Zella. So I think the show is being deliberate in basically replaying themes from season one, where we're going back to Lawrence's hometown, but how they're getting there and the actions of both Lawrence and the Man in Black. Like you said, him playing it differently, but it's the same scenario where, you know, him cutting off Lawrence from his loop and being like, yeah, man, I know your family's there. And then the, you know, the situation where in season one, it was actually the Man in Black who ended up just torturing his family. And now the kind of the role is reversed and he ends up kind of being more of a hero, even though he refuses to kind of admit that that's who he is. I think this might be where he's trying to, or maybe revealing his true nature once we get down to like the very end of it, in that kind of finding yourself piece, where the show is being very deliberate in replaying themes with the same plot line but having the same characters in different roles.
That's interesting to me, because when we think back, like you're saying, when William first came to the park, he might have seen the park as this place people could go to where they have the chance to step up and be the hero and do the right thing. And then over time, he's just seen people come in and just fuck things and kill things. And like, he's almost seen, like, he might have had really high aspirations for what this park could mean to people. And he's just seen the dregs of society kind of drag it down.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, like, that's why we say maybe he's just taking a different perspective, and especially since the stakes are real. He knows, like, he could get hurt now.
The next scene, we are back to the record player and the bike, and this time James Dellis is dancing Ex Machina style. He stares at himself in the mirror. He pours the cream better this time. William visits again. This time William hands him a note that is the exact conversation that they just had. We see the first time they have this conversation, he passes the note, and this time we actually see what the note says. He tells him it's been 7 years. He says, he asks if he's in California anymore, and William says, if you can't tell, does it matter? Which is something that, I forget her name, the blonde robot.
Angela,
yeah, in the first season, yeah, says to him when he's first getting introduced to the park. He says he's ready to leave. He wants to fuck his wife, and then he finds out his wife is dead. She had a stroke, and he said that Juliet had buried her in the family plot. Delos starts to have a tic with his hand. William tells him he needs to stay longer, and then Delos says he wants to get some fresh aid, and his speech is starting to get messed up. He's starting to break down. William tells him he'll come back tomorrow. William leaves, and then they torch the whole room, everything that's in it, and Delos gets torched. This time he made it 7 days. Why do you think they torched the whole place? It seems pretty wasteful. In fact, someone on Reddit found that sand glass that he had in there, and it cost $12,000. So they keep, you know, burning this $12,000 hourglass. So why do you think that they torch it?
Rich people, man.
Yeah, and I think it's just symbolism for, like, we're supposed to, like, imagine, like, and we'll find out later, kind of with more visuals, that, like, this is supposed to be like hell. Mm-hmm. So when you see, like, the fire and stuff like that, it's just visual. There's no reason, I don't think, for it. I think it's just, you know, for kind of, like, set the scene and for, like, visuals, like, and to kind of, to mirror hell.
Yeah, like, the reasons probably don't have to do with the show. It probably has to do with the viewer, where they want us to see both the devil and hell, and also just like our society being so wasteful. Right. Are there other things from that scene that you guys picked out that you found interesting?
I mean, like I said, I just, this is when I kind of first noticed like where they were going with this as William like was getting older, and I just thought like that was cool. And like the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, now I get it. And it just kind of was like, then I was like all in on this episode because I'm like, I see where it's going, and I was like really pumped.
How about you, Keaton? You have anything that sticks out?
No, it was just the basically what Zeke said about the symbolism, which will get called back later in his monologue that you'll get to in a couple minutes.
Yeah, so in the next scene, Craddock, he's opening the weapon crates that the Men in Black led him to. They find the nitro. The bartender does not have a steady hand, so Craddock puts the shot of nitro on the bartender's hand and makes him walk with it. And when he turns around, Craddock shoots the shot glass and blows off his hand. It's a pretty short scene there. Anything that you guys take away from that?
Yeah, he's being remarkably cavalier for a man who basically witnessed everything that he did with Dolores. I'm surprised that this is his approach.
Are you talking about Craddock, or are you talking about...
Yeah. he was basically given a second chance from Teddy, and knowing that Dolores is still out there, obviously, I mean, he's trying to collect all this stuff to, I guess we can assume, go after her. But knowing that she has like the tech with her and witnessing that power, I'm just surprised that he's just kind of going on this little side rampage. It seems like he could be much more productive by trying to get like the townsfolk and people on his side before Dolores comes through and starts working her witchcraft. So I'm just kind of surprised that this is the approach that he's taking to just continuing to make more enemies.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think that he's just following a loop that Ford set him on to kind of for this game, for so William can go through the same thing he went through, where last time he was here, he was almost the Craddock character in the situation.
Right.
So he's not necessarily following what would be the smart path. He's more just on the set path.
Right.
I think the only thing I really took from this whole scene was the man in Black's reaction to when the bartender got his hand shot off. Like, he actually, it kind of seemed like he felt bad. Like, he was like, my guy just got shot.
I think the reason is because that's the hand that pours the liquor.
So. Yeah. He's like, damn it. Yeah, but I was like, huh. Like, he seemed like he actually cared about that guy. It was weird.
So the next scene, the Ghost Nation are walking the captives, and they tell Grace that they're going to the First of Us. That's the same guy that we see, I forget his name, but we see when Logan gets the initial pitch for Westworld, and then Grace unties herself and runs. She hits one with a torch, and none of them chase her. They just let her run. And then the first of them leans over to Stubbs, and he whispers, "You only live as long as the last person who remembers you." And then Stubbs turns around, and all the hosts are gone. What do you guys think that quote symbolizes?
Oh, man, that's deep. I mean,
do you think it's something that's been answered yet? Because I wasn't sure.
No.
Okay.
No. And the one thing I kind of didn't get is, like, how, like, everybody kind of disappeared. Wasn't there, like, other people tied up and it was just kind of like...
I think the people were still there. I think they were on the ground from what I saw, but I might have... It was, like, a dark scene, so I might have not seen it.
That's what I thought too, and I watched it a couple times, and it was like, it seemed like a bunch of people were tied up, and then all of a sudden they were just all gone. And I know Grace ran away, but then it was like, he says that, he puts the knife to his throat, and then all of a sudden, like, boom, like, everybody's gone. Like, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's going to have a bigger meaning in the end, but as far as that scene goes, that was the one thing that stuck with me, is like, where the hell did everybody go?
Mm-hmm.
So my take on that quote specifically is, it's foreshadowing for what they're trying to do with Delos, and they're trying to put his consciousness into a host to basically keep him alive and make him live forever. But truly, you only live as long as the last person who remembers you, so it's not worth it.
Yeah, William says to him something along the lines of, the memory of you is better than the actual you, or something along those lines that he says, so I guess that...
Yeah, that's a great point. And he also mentions to, well, William mentions to James Delos, like, your wife is dead. Your daughter is dead. Your son is dead. Like, nobody is left that cares about you. So that's a great point, Keaton. I didn't even pick up on that, but that's a great point.
Yeah, so the next scene, Bernard wakes up. Elsie has patched him up. She still doesn't trust him. She hasn't seen this type of encryption code before that she's looking for, that she's looking in the lab. And he says he has. It was in Abernathy. And Bernard said he's been there before. He thinks Ford sent him. So there's a... Oh, then there's a time flash. And Bernard is making a control unit. He says they weren't for building hosts. She finds a door. They hear banging on the other side. Bernard says, I'm not here with you, am I? And here's another time flash. And now it's just Elsie. She shoots the door open. So a couple questions. Is Bernard a safe narrator for us? Should we trust him, or should she trust him? And then what's going on with him when he says, I'm not here with you, am I?
I think this is the big reveal of the season, is what, like, where, like, kind of where's Bernard? Like, where's the real Bernard? Is this a, like, kind of a another host form of Bernard trying to, you know, unlock a key? I think he has done this with Elsie and then in previous episodes multiple times. Past, future. Right now, I don't know where the timeline is. You could argue that some of those flashes may even be in the future. I know that's kind of out there theory, but that's what I think it means, is like he doesn't know what, because he's done this so many times, he doesn't know like at what point he's at.
So is he a safe narrator for us to trust?
No.
And I don't think so. Do you guys think she should trust him? Because we see from the episode, she starts the episode pointing the gun at him. Then by the end of the episode, he has the gun. In my mind, I would never trust him. Because even if he wants to do the right thing, we don't know if he's making his own decisions.
Right, yeah. And in the last scene, I mean, you're about to get to why you shouldn't. She has that moment with him where they're basically hashing that out. Like, if we're going to work together, then we actually have to work together. And, like, no more lies, no more bullshit. And he immediately has one more flashback to where he was the one, essentially, that killed everybody that's in that lab that they're in. And she's like, hey, what's going on? Are you cool? We need to leave. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. No worries.
Let me ask you guys a logistical question. Because we see this happen in tons of sci-fi, and it goes one of two ways. There's an electronic door lock, and she shoots it, and the door opens. I would never shoot it. I would always think that would keep the door locked. But we see sometimes it opens in movies, sometimes it stays locked. What do you guys think of that? It has nothing to do with the episode, but would you guys ever shoot a lock if you're trying to get into a electronic door?
I think if I had no options, I would try, but I would maybe try to like pop it open and see if I could like get a spark going or something and pop it open that way.
Like R2-D2 style?
Yeah, like just try to get, I don't know, maybe like get the red and blue wire and spark them and see if that would do anything before I would shoot it. But I think last resort I would.
So the next scene, Lawrence, we see him tied up and getting beaten. Craddock asks the man in black if he's upset about the way they're treating his friend. And William says he's not his friend. Craddock says him and Death go way back and pours a shot of nitro. Craddock calls Lawrence's wife to come over. He dances with her like the man in black did in the first season. He says that Death is an old friend of his. He's making her watch Lawrence get beaten up. Craddock makes her walk the shot to Lawrence. Craddock says he served Death well, and it's watching over him. Man in black sees Lawrence's wife with the shot, flashes back to him seeing someone dead in the bathtub. You think Death favors you, brought you back, but Death's decisions are final. And he goes on, and then he says, Death is always true. You haven't known a true thing all of your life. You think you know Death, but you don't. You didn't recognize him sitting across from you this whole time. And then Men in Black takes down the militia. He takes the nitro from the wife and makes Craddock drink it. And Lawrence shoots him in the stomach. And then he walks over to him and says, don't worry, amigo. I'm here watching over you now. So first of all, that was a really badass quote. But what do you guys think about that scene?
This is my favorite scene in Westworld history, and that quote will go down in Westworld lore. It will be on t-shirts for years and years to come. I loved this scene. I think just when he says that you didn't recognize death and it was sitting right across from you, I think this is when we're going to see how I mentioned to you guys earlier, that we might see him start to go on the hero path, I guess you could say. And I don't know, I was excited because I kind of had like this theory like that eventually the Man in Black would end up being kind of the good guy in the end. So I think this might be the start. So I was happy.
I really liked this scene. This was pretty awesome. That, I mean, like you said, a badass quote. And that's one of the things that this season in particular, Westworld has been really, seems like more ironic with the quotes. Another great one being from the first episode when Maeve is talking to Sizemore and Sizemore tries to turn her in when they're doing the first sweep to the security folks. She says, if you try that again, I'm going to rip off your favorite organ and feed it to you, even though it won't make much of a meal. And Sizemore just, it would look a shock on his face, just goes, I wrote that line for you. Mm-hmm. This was one of those moments where they had that kind of ironic line, but it was so powerful in that mm-hmm. he really has been, in a word, death in really everything that he did in season one. Right? I mean, every time, from the first moment we saw him, when he rolled up to Abernathy's house, right? He showed up, murdered Teddy, murdered Abernathy, murdered the people who were there to murder Abernathy, and then dragged Dolores off into the shed, right? That was our first introduction to the Man in Black. And mm-hmm. then from then on, it was just absolute destruction. And so not only is he just kind of calling back to who he is, but also really to what his abilities are. And kind of just, now I'm gonna start using my powers for good. And that was a nice turn.
Mm-hmm. It almost is like when the stakes are real, he does the right thing. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like when it was just like, I could do whatever the hell I want and I could get shot 100 times and live. I could be an asshole. But when the stakes are real, he chooses to do the right thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. This quote also reminds me of Breaking Bad. There was a real badass quote where the wife was talking about how dangerous people could just knock on the door at any time, and he responds saying, I'm the one who knocks. And like, this is the type of quote that people will be talking about for the rest of the series. It's just like, I don't know, badass thing.
Oh, yes. That quote, I could tell you, I'm sure there's already t-shirts made of it. It's going to be one of the quotes that survives long after the series is over.
This scene in particular had a lot of things that I'm going to get into later, because it kind of leads to my theory. So I'm going to go on to the next scene. It looks like we have three more scenes. So the next scene opens up. We see the fishbowl. He pours the cream perfectly. He has the guests come, but this time the person who's been announcing the guests is a new tech. And this time it's the old Man in Black. So we assume that the original tech no longer works there or died or whatever, and now we have a new tech that's taking over. It takes Delos a long time to recognize him. This causes Delos to realize on his own that he's died and he's been brought back. They have the same conversation. This time, when he asks how long it's been, the Man in Black responds, longer than we thought. Delos wants to leave. Man in Black says no. And Delos starts to malfunction. He hits the cognitive plateau, which Man in Black describes to him. And it's the 149th time he's come back. And this time he made it 35 days. So over these 30 years, they've only gained 35 days. Williams tells Delos that he's not sure anymore. Delos' hand starts to twitch, and William starts to think that it's been a mistake. People aren't meant to live forever. Take Delos, for example. He's no ethics. Everyone prefers the memory than the actual man. And then he asks them, enjoying running my company, living in my house, fucking my daughter. And then he tells them that his daughter Juliet is dead and that she killed herself. Delos gets upset and blames him, asks what he did to her. It takes him a couple times to say it, but he says it. And then William tells him that the world is better off without Delos and maybe better off without me. And then Delos starts calling for Logan, and he tells him that Logan OD'd years ago. He couldn't face reality. It took me a long time to learn that some men are better off dead. Delos flips out and starts smashing things. William leaves and tells the tech not to turn me in this time, that it may be valuable to leave him and to observe him. So what do you guys take out of that scene?
There was a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One thing that... this is the last time that we see the Man in Black in this scenario. To me, one thing that is just little symbolisms that I liked. I loved the fishbowl in there. So it was basically... that's what Delos was in. He was in a fishbowl and has the short memory and everything. So I thought that was a really good symbolism. And then all these people in his family dying, it's kind of like what you guys were talking about earlier, where, you know, the memory, it's only as good as the last person that remembers you. There's things in here that I think helped William move on to realize he was making a mistake and not everyone should live forever. And I think this is kind of this moment. It's almost what set everything in motion. I don't know how long it was until Man in Black heads into the park, but it seems like this is the thing that made him want to almost figure out what life is all about, because he doesn't believe in eternal life anymore.
I liked how this time when William walked into, I guess you could say, I'm just going to call it the cage, I don't know what else to call it, but James Delos, he doesn't recognize him. He's like, who the fuck are you? And then eventually when he starts saying stuff, he's like, William? You know what I mean? Because obviously he remembers William as the younger version. So I thought that was cool. And then William's attitude while talking to him is like completely different from when, like, you see him, like, when he was younger. He was a lot more, you know, calm. He was, you know, more caring. And this time he just, Men in Black / William just kind of walks in. And he's like, you could tell he's just like done with this, like, experiment. Like, he's had enough, and it kind of almost like this is like a waste of his time type of attitude when he was talking to him.
Yeah, do you guys think that, how much guilt do you think the Man in Black puts on himself for not only his wife dying, but also the fact that Logan OD'd? So when they come into season one, William sees Dolores pick up the can for someone else and realizes that none of it matters. But before that point, he basically went out of his way to ruin Logan's life. And then leaving the park, we see Logan once in a flashback this season where he seems to be shooting up some sort of drugs, and this is basically caused by the Man in Black. And then Williams tells Delos that Logan OD'd, and he takes the guilt in all these things, and it makes him realize that all of this was a mistake.
Yeah, that's what I got from it too. Like, why am I, like, what is the point of this? Like, why are we continuing to fund or try to, I guess you could say, extend life? Like, I think this is kind of where he realizes, you know, what's, you know, the true meaning of life, which to him might be death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just so much to unpack from this, this scene. There's a lot of things that just kind of came to a head with it. And I think kind of the most curious piece is just the fact that he decided not to torch it and just kind of let him self-destruct himself, or he thought self-destruct himself.
Do you think that was to punish Delos, or do you think it was actually for science reasons, or do you think there was other reasons why he did that?
He might have blamed Delos for maybe he didn't want to take the blame on himself for, like, his wife killing herself. Maybe he was putting the blame on James Dale, like, her father, because he didn't want to take the blame on himself. So maybe he's like, oh, like, it's not my fault, it was his fault that she turned out that way, so let him suffer.
Well, I guess all this time we've been thinking that his wife killed herself because he went to the park and fell in love with Dolores, became obsessed with the park. What if his idea was to almost do like a Facebook spying on people for marketing reasons thing, and Jim Delos wanted to do this eternal life thing, and she kind of blames William that they're basically torturing her dad over and over again. So it's possible that he does blame Jim for that because he wants to come back, and the family might have been opposed to it because Delos doesn't see what's happening to him over time, but the family can see how he's going through these same torturous loops.
Yeah, he had a totally different attitude.
What if he had started out doing the, data collection and spying on his wife. And then it was too much, and then he kind of pushed her over the edge with it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was mad that, I don't know, like James Delos was able to have this gift of regeneration, or maybe his wife couldn't for whatever reason. Maybe, obviously, if she killed herself, maybe it was too late to transfer the consciousness, so he was pissed off about that. Like, there's a bunch of stuff like this that this scene could go into, but he definitely had a major change in attitude when he visited him the last time.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if it was to punish him, because, I mean, we're very aware of the fact that it's not Delos.
Mm-hmm.
From the minute that he's like, I take it I didn't recover. So mm-hmm. he's aware that he died, and it's not really him. And at the same time, though, I think he was trying to prove some kind of point, because he seemed to take it personally when, or he at least had a reaction when he points out that Joliet's dead, and the Robo Delos response is, what did you do to her? And he puts it squarely on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a visible reaction to it. So,
yeah, I mean, even if he wasn't punishing him because he doesn't necessarily, you know, remember the punishment because he's a robot, like, he might just be doing it, punishing him for himself so he can feel like he got vengeance.
Right, yeah. Like punching a picture of LeBron James because he makes me angry.
Yeah, which I do often. All right, so there's only two more scenes, and we'll wrap this up, and then we'll get into the theory stuff. So this next scene, Elsie and Bernard enter that same lab. Elsie sees someone in there. It says 149 rebuilds on the console. She opens it. The record is skipping. Everything's smashed. Flashing red lights. The tech is dead. Delos is riding the bike. He stops. He walks to the mirror. His face is all sliced up. He picks up shattered glass and slices himself some more. I'm all the way down now. Can you see all the way to the bottom? And then Delos attacks Elsie, and Bernard defends her, and he whoops his ass. And then Delos says this quote, they say there are two fathers, one above, one below. They lied. There's only the devil. And when you look up from the bottom, it was only his reflection laughing back at you. And Delos dies. They start to walk away, and Delos starts crawling. And he says, if you plan to cheat the devil, you at least owe him an offering. And Elsie ignites him. She asks, was a host or human? And Bernard said, I think both. He tells her it was Delos. Bernard says he thinks that they intend to keep trying to do that. So then Bernard has a time flash of him pocketing the control unit. Bernard says Ford had him print one for another human. Bernard says since Ford died, he's not in control anymore. Now Bernard can make his own decisions. She makes him promise no more lies and he'll never hurt her again. He says, of course. We see a flashback of him whispering to the drone hosts, and the hosts start killing all the humans and then in the lab, and then having the drones kill themselves except one. And then Bernard curb stomps the last living human. Time flash, and Bernard and Elsie leave together. All right, anything on that one?
The first thing I thought when he mentions, like, there was two fathers was obviously Ford, who created the hosts, and then himself, who was kind of the first test of human conscious transfer into a host. So I thought that's kind of where I thought, like, the two fathers things came from, was he was referring to Ford and himself. And then I loved the part when he was like, if you make a deal with the devil, you have to be prepared to make it all. I love that quote. I thought that was awesome.
I have to say that whenever I do shots from now on.
Yeah, that's and, you know, that was the call back to the, you know, the symbolism of burning it in. Surprised that, I guess eventually as Elsie ignites him as she walks away, so the kind of all fires up there. But I think there's a lot of kind of foreshadowing in those words, too. And one of the biggest kind of theories that's come out of it is what is the, or who is the devil, or the symbolism of the person who's underground? Because there's been a lot of people who, or a lot of theories, and I'm assuming this is going to segue us into our theories portion of the podcast. So I'm just going to get right into it anyway.
Well, let me just, I'll just wrap up the last scene real quick. So there's not really, the only theory is there's one quote that goes with this. Everything else is straightforward. So Lawrence's wife thanks Man in Black. He offers his cousins. Lawrence's daughter says, I remember who you are. One good deed doesn't erase that. He says he's going to play the game to the bone. She says he doesn't understand the real game. If you're looking forward, you're looking in the wrong direction. They leave on horseback into the sunset, and coming out of the sunset is another rider. It's Grace Emily Gremily. She says, hi, Dad. All right. So back to what you were saying, Keaton.
Yeah. So now I forgot what I was saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The theory. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the devil theories. So a lot of people, I mean, that was kind of the first immediate theorizing that people pulled out of this episode. And the first few that I've heard, which I'm curious to get your guys' reaction on, is that the devil underneath was Ford, who spent a lot of his time underground messing with hosts. And he's still pulling the strings, which seems like that's still very much true. And also, I think I'm leaning that way because we're under the assumption that Ford is dead. And typically we think of dead people as 6 feet underground. And he's still controlling the narrative and the storyline for the Man in Black. So I think that that's kind of foreshadowing of what the reveal at the end of the season might be, that Ford is still, what my theory was, overarching theory was from last season, that all of the hosts are still on loops and Ford is still controlling them, and that was his narrative.
So Bernard pocketed one of the control units for a human. Who do you think that could be Ford? Do you think it could be Ford's? Or do you have another theory?
There's three people I think it could be. Ford, obviously. I think that's the obvious one, that, you know, Ford, you know, kind of planned that he would get killed, but then ultimately transferred his conscience, you know, before that would happen, so then he could come back. That's the obvious one. Man in Black is my other one, which, you know, I'll get into a kind of a bigger theory about that. And then how about Arnold? That's actually Arnold's conscience in those flash, that episode one where we see all those kind of flashes, is Arnold waking up
talking to Dolores, and
yeah, like that's like this is Bernard, but then like that the ball is actually Arnold, and then he gets kind of reborn and then, you know, fuck shit up.
Wait a minute, so I just thought of something. What if maybe it is Arnold? So when Elsie, like, they flipped open that tablet, and she's like, I've never seen code like this before. And Arnold is like, I have. It was in Abernathy. So what if the data that Abernathy had is the consciousness of everybody that they're trying to upload into hosts? The reason why Arnold has the same code is because Ford uploaded Arnold's consciousness into Bernard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's possible.
I could 100% see that happening. That red ball, because they said there's another human control unit. I don't, did they say Ford made it? I don't know if they said Ford made it, but
Ford ordered Bernard to make it.
Ford, yeah, that was it. Ford ordered Bernard to make an other human control unit. So I could definitely see it being Arnold, because if you watch episode one of season two, those flashes are going to come back to mean something, and it might be that Arnold is back.
Yeah, I mean, that could end up being the overriding question of this season, could be who's that control unit for, and then, like, the last episode we'll find out that, you know, someone's coming back with consciousness.
Because I just think Ford is too easy. Mm-hmm. And but then, you know, that young kid is running around saying stuff, but I just don't think it's Ford.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what difference it would make in the story if Ford came back.
Yeah, I just don't see that. But, I mean, that's probably what they want you to think.
You had a theory about Elsie being chained, seemed chained up there.
Yeah, so this is a bigger theory that a lot of people have been talking about, is that this whole Bernard kind of story arc is all staged in order mm-hmm. to get Bernard to kind of reveal either a key to unlock something, because when he kind of like hacked into Abernathy, he actually downloaded whatever Abernathy had on him into himself, and that they're trying for him to kind of reenact all this stuff so he could unlock it and get it. So, like, the whole, like, pretty much everything, the beach scene, all the stuff with Dolores, it's all staged in order to get Bernard to ultimately unlock this information, because he has, like, the code or the key inside him, and they're trying to get him to remember.
So my next question was, why would he get dragged to that exact cave? But if that's the case, then that would answer that question.
Yeah, it's all staged, everything.
All right, so I have one big theory, and then I have just questions about what Emily's doing there. I guess I'll do the big theory first, and you guys can tell me what we think about this one. And it's not one I believe. I mean, it's not one that I don't not believe it, but if it's one that's true, it's going to kind of be annoying. And that's that the Man in Black is now a robot.
Yes.
So after his wife kills himself, he takes guilt on that. He takes guilt on Logan. He takes guilt on how he's been treating James Delos, and he kills himself. The reason this is because we see a body in the tub, and the body in the tub had slit wrists, and he's said that his wife overdosed. And so he's either lying or he's in denial. And he also said before that the daughter found her overdosed and blamed him. And in this flashback, we see him running upstairs, and all of a sudden it just shows a tub with somebody in it. If he's running up the stairs, like, he didn't see her in the story, he said. So what if he's running up there to, he's just so done with it all, he's running up there to kill himself, and maybe it's his control unit. He also said he doesn't deserve to live forever, and we see him talk to Delos 149 times, and the reason this is to get fidelity. But if they're using this to get Delos' fidelity, they now also have William's fidelity, because he's had the same conversation 149 times that they can use. So what if the new game is for him to get to the door, and the door is consciousness, and Ford needs him to discover it on his own, because that's the only way he can get past the cognitive plateau? I believe all this stuff, but I feel like if this is a theory that comes true, then it's just like everyone's going to be a robot, and like, what's the point of anything? Everyone just like ends up being robots. But overall, how do you guys feel about that theory?
I am 100% in on this theory, maybe 95%, but I'm in on this theory because of what keeps being said to the Man in Black. The game begins when you end and ends where you began. Don't look to the forward, look backwards. It's almost like they're trying to tell him, like, you're a host. Your real body or your real whatever is, it's in the past. It's like they're dropping all these lines and hints that's the case. But I also agree that, like, are they going to play this card too many times? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like, I see what you're saying, but I could definitely see it going that way.
I think it's a perfect bait and switch where they do the fidelity test, and everyone's supposed to think that it's for Delos, and it kind of is, but they can also be using that towards William. That's that and the bathtub part are the two parts that, like, really brought this to my attention.
I disagree. So in season one, when everybody is searching for consciousness and trying to get to the center of the maze and whatnot, all of the hosts are constantly telling the Man in Black that the game is not for him, because he's not a host, because he can't find consciousness, because he's a person. And I'm sticking with that. And I think that the bait and switch is trying to convince everyone of this theory, and that the fidelity testing was actually for the Man in Black.
But now you're under the assumption that Man in Black is a regular host, but what if he's one of these conscience-induced hosts, kind of like James Delos, where he's like a triple upgraded version of a regular host?
I mean, is I have he an another upgraded theory. Version, though? Because the assumption is that Ford solved the cognitive plateau then.
Well, I think that the problem is that Ford needs him to discover it for himself, because whenever they tell, like, when he shows the paper to Delos, that's when he starts to twitch. Whenever he kind of learns that he, like, when they show him that he died, he starts to twitch. So I think he, at least in this test, Ford wants him to discover on his own that he is dead. But
which was the point of finding the center of the maze, right? So then wouldn't the game have been for him?
I don't know. So it's tough because we're working in multiple timelines. Because what if the unit that Bernard put in his pocket is the one for the Man in Black? And, you know, I don't know. It's still a hashed out theory.
Well, because, okay, so obviously this whole transfer did not work on James Delos, but did it not work because when they did the transfer, however they did it, we don't know how they do it yet, he was already dying. So his, mind can't, separate the, because his, so whatever state his mind was when it was transferred, his mind was, like his body and his mind was kind of, dying. You know what I mean? When that transfer happened, he was in the stages of death because whatever sickness he had. What if, the Man in Black transferred his consciousness before he killed himself, perfectly healthy, and maybe that's why it's working?
I don't know if he would want to. If it happens at all, I think it'd be against his will, because he even says to Delos that he doesn't think he deserves to live forever either.
Well, see, that's what I mean. Did he, when his wife died and all, maybe his daughter left him, he just said, screw it, I'm going to go live in the universe I love, which is Westworld. And this whole thing is, for trying to, get him to realize the truth. I don't know. But there's something we're missing. It's there, but we're missing it, because this is episode 4, so we got a lot of stuff still coming.
All right, let's bring up this final thing. What do you guys think Emily's doing there? So there's 5 options I wrote, and you guys might have more. So it could be to stop her dad. It could be to help her dad. It could be to destroy the park. It could be because she knows he's a robot, or it could be to stop what they're doing to her grandfather. Do you guys have other theories of why she might be there, or do any of those stick out to you?
Those pretty much, I think she is there to find her dad, who she knows is really not her dad. I don't know if that makes sense. I think she knows, this is a theory, but I think she may know that he's a host, and maybe she wants to discover how it works.
What do you think, Keaton?
Well, I don't think that he's a host, so I don't think that one is true. I think she's there to kill him. I'm getting wild with the theory.
It's kind of like, what threw me off was, I am under the impression she hates him, but when she saw him, it wasn't like a necessarily hateful greeting. It wasn't the most loving greeting, but it was kind of like, hey, Dad. I don't know. It was, the way she reacted to him was kind of weird to me, so it threw off what I thought was happening with
her. By the way, another ironic line from this season, when Lawrence is trying to convince the Man in Black to go get the weapons and save the day, and his plea is, would you want your daughter to witness you getting shot right in front of her? And he goes, probably she would, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm looking at it, as far as Emily goes, the perspective of human greed. So I'm going to, if I'm going with the Man in Black is a conscience transferred host, I'm going to assume that she is now running the company, and she needs that intel. She needs how this works in order to make an absolute fortune. So that's kind of the perspective I'm looking at it.
See, I don't think she wants any interest to do in the company, but I don't know. She's there for a reason, so maybe she doesn't hate the company. Whenever he talked about her in the past, it just seemed like she was over it. I don't know. Maybe he also doesn't have a full grasp of how she feels, because his story is either inconsistent or his memory was inconsistent when he saw someone in the bathtub.
There's something going on with the Men in Black. These little quotes and things being said to him mean something. I think whatever's going on with him and the Bernard is the whole key to the season.
What does your cat think?
Yeah, she is she's all over the place here.
Do you think it's possible for Dolores to be woke, I guess you could say, and on a loop at the same time?
I mean, to quote Kevin Garnett, anything's possible.
Because, what's going on with that character?
She's on a loop. I already told you.
I was actually going to bring this up.
Then what is the season one means nothing.
Well, so this episode, this episode didn't have Dolores, and it didn't have Maeve. Do we care about them?
No, because Ed Harris absolutely crushed this episode.
I have no interest in Dolores' storyline this season. She's like,
I know, that's what character. I mean. Like, what happened?
I do still care about Maeve's story, just not as much as this Man in Black story.
Not but really.
It was interesting that last season they were probably the two biggest characters, and the episode that didn't have either of them, most people are saying was the best episode in Westworld.
Yes. That's what I understand. Like, what are is this deliberate? Are these writers, like, deliberately doing this to kind of lead us off the scent? Because, like, it's Dolores discovering that the voice in her head was hers the whole time was literally the main arc of season one. And now it seems like it means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure at some point it'll all tie together, but it'll be interesting for us to see. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about or any theories or anything that we missed?
Do you know what the riddle of the Sphinx is?
Yes.
Yes. So I guess we'll explain it for the listeners, but it's the Sphinx asks, and if you get it wrong, it devours you, and it asks what walks on four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs at night? And the answer is man, because he's crawling, walking, and then walking with a cane. So do you think the name of this episode was talking about Jim Delos? Do you think it was talking about the Man in Black, or what do you think it was referencing?
I really don't know, because I don't know who's a man and who's not at this point. I really don't. I think maybe that's the point.
I think the real men are the robots we find along the way.
Can I ask a question? Because now we're going into Shogun world next episode.
Yeah.
How the hell... Okay, we kind of guessed that the reason guns work is because maybe there's like a pressure switch in the guns or the bullets or something. Mm-hmm. How the hell do blades work? Like, how can you, like, fake a knife cut?
You know, like, in the ones they use for movies where you, like, stab and the blade actually just goes into the handle and doesn't stab them. It's going to be, like, those toy ones. I don't know.
I really hope, like, the first episode or something, like, this next episode, they just get that out of the way. Because I've been wondering that for a while.
Yeah. I mean,
or
I guess
it's like
we'll
a
find
laser
out.
Or something. Yeah, it's like some kind of, like, hologram. I don't know.
Man, last episode, Mike told you not to even think about the weapons because it's just going to annoy you. It seems like you did not listen.
If it's the gun itself, I could buy that because there's like a pressure switch in it or something. I could buy that. But the knife, I don't know if I could.
Yeah, maybe it's like reads off the people's magnetic waves and it like bounces off them so it doesn't hit them or something. I don't know. They probably won't explain that.
We'll just have to try it out. We just need to give a knife to one of those Boston Dynamics robots and then have it stab Ziki and see what happens.
Oh my god, that freaks me out. Dude, the one that like is a dog that like opens the door. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
We're all gonna
No,
die.
What freaked me out
all
was
of
that
theirs
damn...
are freaking wild, man.
Also, do you guys see the Google phone secretary thing?
No.
It's like basically Google will call and set appointments for you, and it has like real conversations. The computer's having real conversations with the people, and it can like adapt if you like call for a haircut, and they'll be like, "Sorry, we're all booked that day. How about this day?" And like the secretary can like have a conversation. It's really scary, man.
And this is the start. Google is Delos.
This is the end.
This is where it all starts. It ends.
Yeah, it begins at the end and ends at the beginning. All right, so anything else on your guys' mind? All right, cool. So what's one thing each of you are looking forward to next week besides watching how swords don't work?
So I am excited to see that there's a Shogun Maeve.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Did you not watch the scenes from the next episode?
I never watched the
I don't
from
either.
Next episode.
Oh, okay. Well,
you mean there's
spoiler
two,
alert.
Like
there's literally like there's a Shogun Maeve who's on like the same loop,
you
has
don't
the
think
same
it
job,
could be her, though?
And has the same freaking like script.
You don't think it's the same Maeve that is? Well,
so that means there's a Dolores too.
Yeah.
What sucks is I've been binging Barry on HBO, and before every episode they have commercials for Westworld that show things that haven't happened yet. And I'm like, I don't watch the next weeks on purpose. And then like,
yeah, me too.
When you watch stuff on HBO or John Oliver, and they'll like spoil what's coming up. Oh,
yeah,
well, I hate that.
You can look forward to that in a couple days.
Well, I did see that in one of the commercials, but I was always assuming that it was the same Maeve when we see they get attacked by the Shogun at the end of the last episode. That like she, you know, moves into Shogun world. But What about you, Zeke? What are you looking forward to?
Just where her kind of story is going. Like, okay, if she finds her daughter, what does she do then? Does she then try to leave? Does she? That's all I want to know. Is like, where is her? Where does she want to go? Like, once she actually, she's in a park. So, like, is she just gonna like build a cabin in one of the woods there, or like, what does she want to do?
There's one major thing that we haven't seen at all this season, and I'm wondering if you guys think we will see it this season. Boobs.
Don't even get me going on that.
The people want to know.
Yeah, well.
With that, I think...
I'll pass on that one.
I think that's all we have for this episode.
How many times is Sizemore going to pull out his dick, though?
Yeah, I mean, right.
Once so far, the dick-to-boob ratio is... infinite right what? Now.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for coming on, guys, and we look forward to more Sizemore dick in the next coming season. See how his sword works in Shogun World. But yeah, thanks for coming on, guys, and we will do this again next week.
Can't wait.